Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. Fred Grandy guiding you today. Frank Gaffney will be on a little later talking to Congressman Mike Turner of the House Armed Services Committee. But today we're going to be emphasizing a couple of topics that I don't feel we've given enough attention to. We spend a lot of time, obviously, talking about defense contracting, talking about defense budgeting, but we have always concentrated on American firms. Well, today we're going to Israel and find out about some of the new technology that Israel defense contractors are working with. We'll be talking with Josh Levanton, who is the Director of Business Development for Camero Technology, an Israeli-based firm. A little later, we will also get an update on border security and immigration policy from former INS agent Michael Cutler and our senior fellow Cynthia Farahat. Formerly of Egypt and now with the Center for Security Policy, will be here to talk about new developments in Cairo. But first, let's talk about defense technology in Israel. We're pleased to welcome Josh Levanton, who is, as I said, the Director of Business Development for Camero Technology in just outside of Tel Aviv. And Josh, thanks for being with us. We wanted to talk to you because you have a product line that you're calling Zaver, which I guess when I was a kid, this was the kind of thing you associated with Superman and X-ray vision, but you've apparently got some technology that can actually see through walls. Is that correct now?
That's correct. We have a very revolutionary technology. The Zaver line of products is a radar-based technology that allows us to actually sense through the wall and provide some wartime fighters, whether they're military or law enforcement agencies, with a very interesting approach to their tactical environment.
Let me ask you, is this something that also has an audio capability? If you look through a wall, can you also listen in, or is that a separate technology?
That's a separate technology. What we have is basically a type of imaging technology where we're providing the user with some sort of visual information on what's happening behind that wall or barrier.
Give me an example of how you might use this in Israel.
Well, in Israel and in many other countries, we find ourselves more and more in urban settings doing different operations. And the need to know exactly what's beyond the wall has become very, very apparent, whether you're trying to locate victims in maybe a hostage situation, or you're trying to just identify if there's some sort of suspicious motion that shouldn't be there behind a certain wall.
I would think this would have tremendous applications if you're doing any kind of terrorist surveillance or counterintelligence. Do you foresee authorities in Israel using it for that?
Yes, in fact, we have authorities here in Israel and in more than 20 countries around the world, both law enforcement and military, people using this on a day-to-day basis, using our systems. They're fielded and deployed in both terrorist applications and maybe some internal issues that countries face, such as anti-narcotic operations or anti-kidnapping operations. So it's out there in the field being used.
20 countries besides Israel. Is the United States one of those countries? Are we able to use some of this? Because I can think of several applications within the United States where this would come in very handy.
Yes, we actually have an ongoing contract with SOCOM in the U.S. For our sense-through-the-wall systems. That's with the military. And, of course, we also have some law enforcement agencies in the U.S. who are using our systems.
Oh, that's encouraging. All right, let me ask you something about I don't want to miss the opportunity, seeing as how, obviously, a lot of us are focused on the Middle East right now and principally Israel. As a defense contractor over there, what is the mood? And I'm asking you as a citizen now in Israel, are you anticipating any kind of a strike from Iran? What is the mood as Israel looks north to Iran and south to Egypt in your country right now?
Well, as a country, we're always on our toes here, dealing with a lot of internal issues and threats from our different borders. So we always have that mentality of making sure we're ready. And obviously, in the months past, it's sound like we're even more so on the tips of our toes. So so we're always we always assume ourselves as needing to be ready and be ready for anything.
And is this something that is felt pretty much across all party lines, whether they're Likud or Labor?
Yes, I think so. I think it's something that's felt across. You hear it in the news every day, so it's definitely something on the citizens' minds. So the political parties, I'm sure, are feeling the same pressure.
You know, obviously, you probably know because you're an American citizen as well as an Israeli citizen that right now we are in the middle of drastic budget cuts, and the United States defense budget is really first up on the block, looking at perhaps as much as $1 trillion being taken out of our defense capabilities over the next 10 years. I just was curious, seeing as how you're in the defense contracting business, is this an issue in Israel? Is there a battle of budgets over defense spending? How much is enough when the Knesset convenes, or when the government goes to the Knesset and asks for money?
Sure. The last budget approval that was just made here did cut some of the spending on the defense side, and there's been a little bit of an uprising from the Ministry of Defense here in terms of them needing more funds that are allotted to them at the moment. But that's a ongoing struggle. No matter how much you provide them with budgets, there's always going to be something missing, and it's definitely felt here.
So regardless of the threat, and obviously Israel is, I think anybody would argue, surrounded by threats, there's still that internal controversy as to whether or not you're spending too much on defense and, of course, concomitantly not spending stuff on perhaps social issues or welfare spending?
Correct. We always have to maintain a good economic outlook, and we can't overspend on the entire budget. And as everything takes cuts, the Defense Department is one of them that that needs to take that cut as well.
All right. Before we let you go, I wanted to go back to the Zavr technology just for a moment and ask you again, in Israel, when you have surveillance technology like this that is state-of-the-art, that essentially allows you to spy, to surveil through walls, and use this either for law enforcement or for military operations, is there a pushback from Israelis who say, you are violating our rights of privacy? This is a tool that perhaps is too controversial to be used, or is the threat level in Israel so prevalent that this is not an issue the way it would be in the United States?
I believe the threat level is a little bit more prevalent here, but normally these systems are being used in hostile territories where a lot of the local law is not in place, and you don't have to worry so much about the threats. The same as these systems being used abroad overseas, there's different levels of privacy concerns that have to be worried about, and we're not seeing so much of a pushback for the operations that these systems are used in.
And finally, I'm looking at your product line here. In terms of the actual tool or technology itself, how close do you have to be to a wall or some kind of barrier to actually see through it? Is this a device that has to be put right up against the structure, or can you do this at a distance and still get the kind of imaging that you need to understand what's going on?
So a great advantage to our system is that it does not have to be placed on the wall. You can actually use it in what we call a standoff operation. It could be put on the other side of the street or even camouflaged, and you can still see with a wireless monitor from the other side of the street what's going on inside a particular building.
So in other words,
allows the, okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, so whether it's a police department or a military operation, they don't necessarily have to be right in harm's way to case out the enemy.
Correct, which is a big advantage. Often they don't want to get close to any kind of hostile situation, so this allows them to go ahead and start building a intelligence picture without approaching a situation.
Well, this is a fascinating piece of technology, Josh. Good luck with it. I'm just wondering if this becomes as prevalent in the private sector as it does in the public sector, whether you'll be selling this to private citizens who are checking out to see whether or not they've got a case for divorce in a marital situation. Do you foresee that happening at some point?
Not yet.
All right. Keep us posted. That's Josh Levotin. He is with Camero, a defense technology firm in Israel, talking about the new Camero technology. And when we come back, a discussion with former INS officer Michael Turner. Keep it here.
First line of defense in the war of ideas, Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
This is Frank Gaffney with a Secure Freedom Minute. President Obama is sending dangerous signals to visiting Communist Chinese Vice President Xi Jinping, presumed to be the next leader of his country. For example, President Obama gave Xi the full red carpet treatment on Monday, despite fresh evidence of China's relentless cyber warfare against American government and business computers. It seems that for over a decade, Chinese hackers have been ripping off the technology and secrets of Nortel, a major U.S. telecommunications company. Then, despite indications that China is secretly and massively building up its nuclear arsenal, Mr. Obama is actively considering unilaterally cutting the U.S. nuclear deterrent by as much as 80%. Ignoring strategically threatening Chinese actions ensures we will be subjected to more of them. Worse, by rewarding such actions, we not only invite China's contempt, we deserve it. This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at SecureFreedomRadio.com.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit shariathethreat.com. Or order your copy of Sharia, The Threat to America at Amazon.com.
Experts say there's no shortage of crude oil.
There really is no shortage of oil at the moment.
So why do gasoline prices keep going up?
There's all this fear that's out there, and that really goes a long way to making prices go up.
And home prices seem to be headed even lower.
We really aren't seeing any markets that are showing any sustained recovery at this point.
Now more than ever, is this a timeout or a double dip?
It could halt the economy's recovery in its tracks.
1260 WR. RC, new choice, intelligent talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. Fred Grandy filling in for Frank Gaffney today. And I want to welcome to our program a gentleman you've probably heard if you watch Fox News or you listen to radio talk shows, or maybe you've been to his website, michaelcutler.net. Maybe you've heard his own radio internet show called Bordering on Insanity. But he is arguably one of the best experts we have in this country right now on immigration and the ramifications thereof. He is currently with Californians for Population Stabilization. But most importantly, he was 30 years as an INS agent and knows whereof he speak. I can say that because Michael and I were on a panel together a couple of weeks ago out in California, and I said, I got to get this guy on the show. And Michael, here you are. Promises made, promises delivered.
I tell you, and it was great meeting with you, great listening to what you had to say. That was a great event that concerned Women of America and Act for America put together. And, you know, I was actually on my way back down from California's Population Stabilization. CAPSWeb.org is their website. So I did a twofer on the West Coast. Great place to be, especially in the wintertime, wouldn't you say?
Well, let me start with something that you said that is still kind of rattling around my brain. We talked about border security and where we're putting our men and materiel. And you mentioned that we currently have, I think the number was somewhere around 60,000 TSA agents, transportation security agents at airports, frisking nuns, patting down preschoolers. But we only have, and I want to make sure I get the numbers right, you said what, about 6,000 immigration and custom enforcement agents?
Between 6,000 and 7,000.
And you said only half of those are actually doing immigration work, in other words, actually trying to capture the people that are here illegally. Do I have that right?
Yeah, and in fact, their mission, pardon me, is even more involved in trying to capture them. They're supposed to do fraud investigations. They're supposed to work on various task forces. You know, I spent half my career with the drug task force. So if you want to talk about how many people are actually out there in the hunt, if you're an illegal alien, you probably have a better chance of buying a winning lottery ticket than getting arrested by ICE.
All right. Well, that's a little chilling, because we seem to be deploying all of our resources and all of our political rhetoric to obviously adding people to the TSA or putting them on the border or building fences. But I know you wrote a piece a couple of years ago called Immigration and the War on Terror, and you mentioned obviously ways to get into this country, violating the Mexican border, violating the Canadian border, maybe stowing away on a ship. But here's a point that you made that I think I want to base our discussion on. You say if you have an international airport or you've got a port, you are a border state, because most people who wind up becoming illegal get in through a visa program, which, if I'm reading your material correctly, we're not bothering to police.
That's absolutely correct. The official estimate is that there are between 5 and 10 million visa violators, aliens who were admitted through the lawful process and then went missing in America. We don't really know how many illegals are here. They say 12 million. I'm willing to bet it's between 30 and 40 million. But we know that there are millions of illegal aliens who came through the inspections process and vanished. We also know that there's no integrity to, or little integrity to, the process by which we give aliens in this country, residency and citizenship. A couple of years ago, they said that they had lost 111,000 files of Citizenship and Immigration Services, naturalized 30,000 aliens without their files.
But I want to go back to that number that you quote, about 5 million visa violators. How are we going after that? What agency of ICE is actually going after these guys that we know are criminals?
Well, a couple of years ago, I was interviewed for CNN, and I saw the reports, and I was interviewed for a newspaper account that said that there were fewer than 300 agents working for ICE who were actively pursuing leads to find those 5 or perhaps 10 million illegal aliens. And under the Obama administration's policy of not arresting and seeking to remove aliens who have no criminal convictions, they're not looking very hard for these folks. In fact, Obama said that he wanted to give 300,000 illegals employment authorization.
So really what we have is a kind of catch-and-release program, which you normally associate with fish and wildlife, right?
Right, and we're not even tagging them properly.
Okay. But you know, Michael, I mean, we're making a joke out of this, but if I'm doing my math correctly, we've got special agents looking for violators, and their ratio is about 1 to every 18,000 violators. I mean, I don't even know why you'd want to be in this business if you had a case file that large.
No, I mean, it's an absurdity. And what we have done is to convince people that if you come to America, not only should you come with the expectation of getting away with it, but being rewarded. You have the president, you have members of both political parties promising pathways to citizenship for these folks. And if you're a terrorist, this tells you how to enter and how to embed. Don't get arrested by the cops and nobody will look for you.
So I can't even presume the level of frustration you experienced when you were actually in this business as an INS agent. But that does invite a question. You've obviously been tracking this for a number of decades. Have we ever, as a country, had an effective and sensible immigration system?
No, we didn't, but it was never as critical as it is today. When I started working for the INS, and it's hard to believe it's been that long, I started in October 71 as an inspector at Kennedy Airport, did that for 4 years, and then I became an agent. We didn't have the numbers. We didn't have the imminent threat of terrorism. We didn't have the drug cartels the way that we do. We are inundated from the four corners of the planet by transnational gangs, and it's not just Latin America, it's the Russian community, it's Asian organized crime. We have criminals from every part of the world. We have terrorists who certainly are setting up shop. We hear about the Iranians and how we worry about sleeper cells. Robert Mueller, the head of the FBI, has testified before numerous hearings about it. I've testified before 15 congressional hearings and often raised the issue of sleepers. And we are making it a game for the bad guys to come here easily and then hide in plain sight, which is what the 9/11 Commission referred to as the embedding process. In fact, I gave testimony to the 9/11 Commission.
But it seems as though the policy is going in the opposite direction. I mean, we're spending all of our times worrying about a border fence or the Dream Act or various political ramifications of what seems to be an appalling lack of law enforcement. I mean, are we even enforcing the laws that we have on the books?
Absolutely not. We are not. They're going after employers once in a while to create the illusion. This is all about illusions. I mean, I don't know why David Copperfield doesn't run for president. At least we have a professional illusionist, because where immigration's concerned, that's all we get are illusions. You know, the virtual fence that I had predicted would stop virtually nobody.
Okay. Well, that's a great way to put it. But I also want to get to something that is very popular on the political campaign trail this year, and something that I'm sure will resurface regardless of who is president. And that is this whole question that you hear on both Republican and Democratic sides of perhaps allowing people who are here illegally to become citizens or at least legal residents by serving a stint in the military. The premise being, well, if they commit to Uncle Sam, they've obviously proven their citizenship. I know you're virulently opposed to this. Tell us why.
Yes. Well, first of all, first-hand experience, I was working with the Naval Intelligence Service. Now it's Naval Investigative Service. Years ago, back then it was ONI. New York City Police and others were investigating people from foreign countries who lied about their identities to get into the Marine Corps, learn how to use heavy weapons, steal the weapons, go AWOL, and pull off commando-style bank robberies.
So, in other words, I was just going to say, so in other words, what a lot of our smarter illegal immigrants and potential terrorists are doing are essentially inviting the United States to train them in the very tactics they'll use against us, and obviously providing them arms and material as well.
That's right. And if you look at the Zetas, Los Zetas in Mexico started out as the elite of law enforcement and the military in Mexico. We trained and equipped them, and they are now among the most virulent and vicious of all the drug traffickers in the world.
And that's even before Fast and Furious, right?
Yes. And you know, since Felipe Calderon has taken office, they estimate there's now 45,000 dead Mexicans as a result of the cartel wars. And we trained some of these, the worst of them. So, you know, understand the problem. Why would you want to give access to our playbook to people who can't prove who they are? You know, the term undocumented should send a chill down your spine. It means that there is no way of knowing the true name or nationality or background or intentions or affiliations of the people you're dealing with. And right now there are Iranian shock troops stationed in Venezuela. So if you live in Latin America for 5 or 6 years, how easily could you pass yourself off as a Latino? Come to America, Muhammad becomes Miguel, join the military, and think of the damage you can do from within a military base. Think about the Fort Hood shooting. Think about how this leaves us vulnerable.
Well, unfortunately, Michael, we're going to have to leave this interview right there, but I hope you'll come back and talk to us on Secure Freedom Radio, particularly. And I want to concentrate our next interview on this, particularly about the vulnerability in Latin America, because it seems to me we are winking and nodding at a situation that's getting worse before it gets better. Michael Cutler, thanks for being with us on Secure Freedom Radio. When we come back, Frank will be talking to Congressman Michael Turner of the Armed Services Committee. Keep it here.
We want to know what you think here at Secure Freedom Radio. Leave your comments or questions for us at 1-800-332-7131.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hey parents, finding it hard to communicate with kids in today's world of ever-changing slang?
Hi son.
Excuse me?
Introducing the Communicizer. Just strap non-toxic Communicizer to your mouth and go from boring old man speak.
Oh, you know, I'm here if you want to talk.
To 100% off the chain.
Text me whenever, yo.
It's that easy.
Thanks to Communicizer, I'm relevant to my kids again. I mean, I'll fly, boo.
And now when you buy Communicizer, you get the auto-tune attachment free. Sounds so hip-hop, your kids will want to talk to you for hours.
I used to have to walk 3 miles uphill to school every morning, shorty.
I love you, Dad.
I love you too, son.
Communicizer is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you.
For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
For decades, the Democratic Republic of Congo has endured economic collapse, poverty, and war. More than 3.5 million people have died in the conflict. Today, rebel forces continue to wreak havoc in the eastern Kivu provinces. The International Rescue Committee estimates that 30,000 children have been recruited as soldiers, and thousands more have lost their parents. Most of these children lack the most basic level of goods, security, and most especially, clean drinking water. Yet, there is a well of hope coming to eastern Congo in a village called Uvira. Washington, D.C.'s National Community Church is partnering with Global Outreach to bring a water pipeline to the Congo for Christ compound, an orphanage for children who have lost their parents to war and AIDS. Building a clean water source will sustain the school, provide for the children, and hundreds more in the village. Go to www.waterforcongo.com. Learn about the work of Global Outreach and give. You can be part of the community in Uvira, and like a well, you can be a source of hope in life. www.waterforcongo.com.
Hi, I'm Drew Brees, NFL quarterback for the New Orleans Saints, here with Bugs Bunny to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you fuel your body and your mind.
So what do you like to throw around the football like Drew?
Skateboard.
Play frisbee in the park.
Ride a bike.
Kick the soccer ball around.
Or dance in your room.
Just move it your way.
Because nothing makes you feel better than moving every day.
And that makes you part of a winning team.
So be a player.
You'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
Move it your way and be a player.
Get up and play an hour a day, Doc. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
That's right, at letsmove.gov. Let's hear that one more time, Doc. That's www.letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
Following is an important message from President Clinton and President Bush.
In January, Haiti experienced an environmental catastrophe and human tragedy of epic proportion.
But thanks in part to the generous spirit of the American people, the country of Haiti has survived. But now the people need to thrive. President Clinton and I have seen firsthand the power of your contributions at work.
The Clinton-Bush Haiti Fund is on the ground, funding programs that create jobs, teach skills, and assist local businesses.
Our fund is dedicated to supporting initiatives that encourage local entrepreneurs and help build an inclusive economy that lifts up everyone.
Help us continue this work so the people of Haiti have an opportunity to prosper.
Thank you.
To donate, go to ClintonBushHaitiFund.org or text QUAKE to 20222 to give $10. Message and data rates may apply. Brought to you by the Clinton Bush Haiti Fund and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Frank Effney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. I'm really pleased to be able to reintroduce to you all a man that I have come to admire greatly as one of the people on Capitol Hill who's still thinking about the proverbial unthinkable. In fact, he has considerable responsibility for thinking about the unthinkable, specifically the possibility of nuclear attack and the necessity of deterring it at all costs and ensuring that if, God forbid, we need to, we have nuclear forces that are reliable as well as safe and effective. And his name is Mike Turner. He is the congressman representing the 3rd District of Ohio. Particularly important for our purposes is that he is the chairman of the House Armed Services Committee's Strategic Forces Subcommittee. He's been thinking about these things, as I say, and working on them for a long time. It's never been more important that we have a man of his character and intelligence doing so than at the moment when we've just learned the president is seriously considering an initiative that might reduce, perhaps unilaterally, our nuclear forces by as much as 80%. Congressman Turner, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. It's great to have you, particularly to get your sense of what's happening here. Is this a real initiative of the administration, and might it eventuate?
Well, Frank, what's unfortunate here is that the president has put both his national security team and the Department of Defense through an exercise of seeking to lower the United States nuclear deterrent, our nuclear capability, without any reference whatsoever to the current threat that we have in the world. I mean, as you just said in your opening, you know, the fact that we have nuclear weapons, the fact that we have nuclear weapons that could survive an attack and still deliver, you know, overwhelming force to anyone who would seek to do us harm is why we have been able to stay safe. All, you know, military doctrine says that, you know, by having this as a deterrent, and that's why we use the word deterrent, it deters people from taking an action that would harm Americans. And if you lessen that, if you say, well, you know, we no longer need to have a number sufficient to be able to ensure that anyone who attacks us would have overwhelming force in response, you lessen our ability to defend themselves. You invite perhaps folly from them, and then that doesn't even take into consideration the new countries that are coming on board: Iran, North Korea, countries that perhaps can't even be deterred, who are seeking nuclear weapons for the purposes of advancing their own causes and agenda, which are clearly rogue states that are not going to fit within the traditional Cold War, Russia, United States deterrence structure. We absolutely cannot sustain the type of disarmament that this president is looking to undertake.
Before this latest information became available that the president is thinking about, or as you say, asking the Defense Department, the National Security Establishment, to give him options to remove 80% of our nuclear deterrent forces, and presumably leaving us with a single leg of the so-called strategic triad. I don't know if that's been made explicit or not, but you get down to those kinds of numbers. I assume we're really looking at just one of the three legs that have, to this point, as you say, Congressman, served us very well in keeping the peace and preventing nuclear war. You were worrying about the modernization of the forces even before all of this, and the president's commitment to do that, which was, of course, part of the START II treaty, the new START treaty last 2 years ago. Where are we on the actual condition of the arsenal, and does that only exacerbate the possibilities of real danger if we wind up going down to these low numbers, if it's not all that it should be?
Absolutely. And the one thing, you know, we have to acknowledge is that we don't have the Cold War infrastructure anymore. I mean, we have already, you know, upwards of, you know, of thousands and thousands of the weapons and warheads have been taken offline. We no longer have the force that we had before. Part of the argument of being able to go to a lower number, the number that the president had proposed in START, was that we would have a robust nuclear weapons infrastructure so that if circumstances should change, that we would have the ability to either produce more, or if something should arise with respect to our weapons themselves, if there was a problem with them, we would be able to replace them, we would be able to upgrade them, we would have a robust system of maintaining them. By abandoning that and taking us to those lower numbers, since the president himself is the one that said we needed to have a robust capability of production maintenance to achieve the numbers under START, he's in effect saying that we're going to do these numbers in START at our peril, since he himself had characterized that we needed this new infrastructure. And as you know, many of our nuclear weapons are aging. To remain a nuclear power, it's not as if you just buy into a program that produces these once and then you're just done. You put them on a shelf. You have to maintain them. You have to continue to invest in them, just as you would your own car or vehicle and upgrading it. The president made a commitment in START in asking the Senate to approve it, that they would invest and bring these what are dilapidated and aging infrastructure up to speed. He is now walking away from that. He has put off indefinitely the investment in these labs. And, you know, if you're someone who works there, if you're part of our great scientists who have the know-how of both maintaining our system and evaluating other people's systems, you know, you don't want to go to work in something where our country has said we so devalue what you do that we're allowing it to crumble.
That it's a dump.
And exactly.
this again, I guess, really speaks to the question of, are we serious about maintaining a nuclear deterrent or not? We've not been doing any nuclear testing, underground realistic nuclear testing, since 1992, as you know, Congressman Mike Turner. We're trying to ensure that we maintain a workforce that can figure out whether these things would still work. presumably on the basis of giving them a lot of gee whiz technology to test it with. But it sounds as though, absent the kind of efforts that that you've been proposing in your maintaining the president's commitment to our nuclear deterrent and national security act of 2012, we're going to see all of that over the side, and presumably attrition among the people that we rely on to keep this arsenal a going concern at whatever level.
While the world gets less safe, as you know, it's just, so you look at history, the United States has continued to reduce its overall nuclear stockpiles. Russia has similarly, although not with its tactical nukes. The you have not seen that the disarmament movement says that if we disarm, others will too. Well, as we have reduced our numbers, there's no historical basis for that. Others have continued to seek nuclear weapons. More countries have come online. And now as you see, North Korea, and of course Iran. But historically, it does support the deterrence works. So the let's disarm has no historical basis. The let's have a strong deterrent has actually delivered peace. So it's odd to be abandoning one for another that has no historical background or support.
Well, I want to run this by you. This is an explanation for why this odd thing is happening, and that is that we're dealing with a president who is genuinely a radical ideologue when it comes to these things, going back to his time in Columbia University in 1983 when he first said he wanted to disarm the United States nuclear arsenal. We have a lot of folks up on the Hill, your colleagues, Congressman Turner, who I think have believed that the president's just disarming the United States in these budget cuts and reducing our forces in various ways out of a necessity for budget discipline. But is it not a better explanation that, in fact, it's the same thing we see so dramatically at work with the idea that we might reduce our nuclear arsenal to the level of, I don't know, Pakistan's, that really this is a radical ideologue at work?
Right, and this is not about the budget. I mean, we're not going to see significant savings from this. We're only going to see that the United States' overall status as a superpower will be diminished. You know, it's interesting. The president in Prague made a speech that was supposed to be a cornerstone to his presidency, where he called for a world without nuclear weapons and the road to zero. In his presidency, in his term, he will only have achieved eliminating our nuclear weapons. If you put a scoreboard on the wall and you put the countries that have nuclear weapons who are pursuing nuclear weapons, and you start with the Obama presidency and the numbers of inventories that they had, and then you get to his reelection campaign and put the numbers that they have at the end, the only country on that board who's going to have a lower number is the United States. Yeah. In start, Russia was not required to lower their numbers at all.
I have to let you go at that, but that is a critical point. And this is a case where leading from behind would be much preferred to leading with nobody following. Thank you, Mike Turner, for your tremendous work on Capitol Hill with the Strategic Forces Subcommittee of the House Armed Services Committee. Keep it up, and please keep coming back to us with updates. I hope you and your colleagues will resist this harebrained and truly radical disarmament initiative of the president.
From a size 18 down to a size 5, and I was able to keep it off.
Angie had some serious challenges.
I had gone through a divorce and put on quite a bit of weight. There was an accident where I was put on a lot of medication, and I put on over 60 pounds. I tried every kind of diet, but diets just did not work.
Diets don't work is something they hear a lot over at the MetaSystem from Judy Singer.
I heard about Judy Singer's MetaSystem, and I thought, well, couldn't hurt to call, and I called them up, and they told me all about the product, and I thought, well, I'll give it a try. From the first week that I was on it, I wasn't hungry a lot, and it was just amazing. Jumping about 3 months ahead, I dropped 63 pounds.
If you're ready for a natural product that cleanses your system and helps you lose fat, talk to a Judy Singer counselor about the MetaSystem. Call 1-800-711-JUDY. 1-800-711-JUDY. The MetaSystem from Judy Singer. Powerful, all-natural weight loss. 1-800-711-JUDY.
Hi. This is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real special forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a non-profit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its special forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of three children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a fifth grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a five-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home was built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Dennis Prager thinks there should be a simple standard to textbooks.
I'll tell you how I think a textbook should be written. This is what happened. Period.
That is the role of the text.
And if nearly everybody who did something important in American history, if 78.9% of them were WASP males, then I want 78.9% of the textbook to reflect that fact.
I care about truth.
That's why I'm not on the left.
The Dennis Prager Show. Well, come on in and out to food. Weeknights at 10 on 1260 WRC. New Choice, Intelligent Talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone.
At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there.
So now, I'm never alone.
I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill,
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home, or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org.
Even if it's just everyday stuff.
Like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say that?
Really? What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
To securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. Fred Grandy filling in for Frank Gaffney, and very pleased to welcome back one of our senior fellows now, Cynthia Farahat, whom you've heard on this program before, has joined us as a senior fellow, kind of specializing in what's really going on in Egypt right now, translating between the rhetoric and the reality. Cynthia, as you know, has also worked with the Middle East Forum, our friend Daniel Pipes, and is also with Coptic Solidarity and testified in front of the Tom Lantos Committee this fall. And we like to check in with you every so often when stories surface, as a couple have this week, as to what's going on in the Arab Spring. Whenever I read something in the press, I'd say, okay, that's what they're saying. Now what's Cynthia going to say? So let's go to the first one. There is a new character, a guy I haven't heard of before, named Essam El-Aryan, who is supposedly the chairman of the Egyptian Parliament's Foreign Affairs Committee, a member of the Muslim Brotherhood, I would assume, who is now saying, United States, if you presume to cut any military aid, the $1.5 billion that we're giving to the Egyptian military, then we will have to change the terms of the Camp David Accord.
This is absolutely wonderful. Essam El-Aryan, I've met him several times in conferences where they used to come to disrupt create problems for us. He often came, and we once hosted a debate with the party I co-founded in Egypt, the Egyptian Liberal Party, with Essam El-Aryan, with one of our leaders, Mohammed El-Belji, and Essam El-Aryan literally ran from the debate. he...
I mean, he didn't want to debate you.
In the middle of the debate, he ran from the panel. He didn't walk out. He ran. So this
Were your
guy,
questions too tough? I mean...
They were too tough, and he is... He's been the speaker of the Muslim Brotherhood for years, and but we never took him seriously in Egypt. He's a mockery.
Well, do you take him seriously now? I mean, he's essentially saying we'll have grounds to violate the Camp David Accords. How serious is that threat in your view?
I think they want to. They never had peace with Israel.
Yeah, you said that before.
Yes. So
there was
a
ceasefire.
It is a hudna. It's the Islamic concept of truce.
Mm-hmm.
So they want to, now that they're strong, they can break the truce, although they will not go to war with Israel because they're not militarily capable of doing so.
But how strong are they? I mean, they've obviously aspired to political party, the Muslim Brotherhood, the Salafist allies, and you've made a point saying they are still very much in league with the military. I assume that's the same way. But what about the economy? Well, where's the money going to come from to underwrite this new regime?
They don't care because it's a thugocracy. They have a lot of money, and they don't care when the people are poor, but it will haunt them. They do not have, like all fascists, they do not have a long-term vision.
Mm-hmm.
The Soviet Union did not have a long-term vision for economic reform or sustainability. They don't have this. That's not something they think about. And Saudi Arabia is always there to back them up. The supreme guide of the Muslim Brotherhood, the one before this one, Mehdi Aikif, said that they get almost all their funding from Saudi Arabia.
And that will continue,
you think?
And
that will certainly
All right, well,
continue.
That brings me to my second point, and this is the second story I wanted to talk to you about. The president has said, and as a matter of fact, it's in his budget, As you know, he wants to restore the $1.5 billion.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as you know, because you've testified in front of Congress, there's going to be some pushback from both Republicans and Democrats. But the president has also added, and I wanted to get your take on this, $800 million in aid for Arab Spring. Now, what do you think this money, assuming it actually gets appropriated and sent over there, what would that be used for, do you think?
It will be used for the subversion of freedom and dissent and people like me. That's what the aid has been funding for the past 30 years, over 30 years, and that's what it will continue to fund. It will continue to fund the war on people like me in Egypt.
So in other words, we will be funding the oppression of Coptic minorities and Muslim minorities.
And not only that, it will also be funding the threat to America's national interest and security, because recently the Salafi jihadist Mohammed Hassan said they're going to start the Egypt Fund, where they're going to get funds because they don't want American infidel money.
Mm-hmm.
And right now Al-Azhar joined, and it was reported on the website of the Muslim Brotherhood that Al-Azhar Sheikh Al-Tayyib is going to lead the Egypt Fund, along with Sunnah, which is a militant terrorist organization.
Where's the money going to come from? Again, Saudi Arabia?
It's going to come from Saudi Arabia. Obviously, it's going to come from the Gulf and from Islamists all over the globe. So
all right,
now they're telling America, we don't want your money, but America's going, President Obama's saying, oh, please take our money.
But, Cynthia, I mean, the mind reels at this, because one you're saying is if we spend $800 million in supposedly Arab Spring money, we're really funding a terrorist regime. But if we don't, they will go to Saudi Arabia and Qatar and the UAE, I suppose, and get money from them. And those countries are our allies, and they're essentially going to put the money in to prop up a clearly hostile regime to the United States. Have I got this right?
This is exactly it, and that's because it's sort of disaster.
Sort of disastrous? That's like saying Hiroshima was sort of a bomb.
That's more accurate, of course. But that's what happens after all these years of bad, wrong policy.
Okay, so let's reset for a minute. What do you think the United States ought to be doing?
It ought to be doing what President Bush did in the first term of his presidency, because that worked. Now the words like classic liberalism and secularism are in the Egyptian political discourse,
mm-hmm.
Because of his policies. all my political work and hundreds and thousands of others in Egypt is a direct consequence of his good policies. So America needs to stand up. These people are spineless. When I said...
These people being the Muslim Brotherhood and the Salafists.
Yeah, Ibrahim Samlarian ran from us. He didn't walk. He ran, physically running, and we were running after him. So these people are cowards, they're spineless, and it can be easily controlled with a strong discourse.
And if we don't do anything, what would you anticipate to be the future of cops in Egypt?
Mass murder and... mass murder. That's what they
So in other words, they will essentially be eliminated the way they have been in Iraq.
They will be, for sure. That's because the Islamists are not even trying to make it a secret.
And that is a population that you said was somewhere between 10 and 20 million people originally, right?
It is. It's over 17 million.
Okay.
That's the real number that the church doesn't disclose publicly.
All right. So the United States right now is... watching and waiting, what kind of signals do you think we're going to get from Chairman El-Erian or the new speaker, Katatna? Are they now going to become more overtly hostile to the United States, or do you expect more rhetoric, or is this mostly bluster?
They are going to be more hostile because if they can get away with it, why not?
And what about the relationship with Hamas? Do you expect that to be much more open and reciprocal?
It is going to be much more open. The Hamas Charter in their Article 2 say that they are a wing of the Muslim Brotherhood.
Okay, well then let me stop you right there because we've talked about this privately and this is something that I think we'll probably discuss with members of Congress.
Mm-hmm.
Hamas is a foreign terrorist organization so designated by the government of the United States. If they are part of the Muslim Brotherhood, if they are essentially joined at the hip with the Muslim Brotherhood, then why don't we designate the Muslim Brotherhood as a foreign terrorist organization?
Exactly. Why not?
Well, because I can tell you why not. There are various rules and ordinances and language that would prohibit that. But going forward, as somebody who has escaped from Egypt, do you consider the Muslim Brotherhood a government organization or a terrorist organization that has usurped power?
It is an international terrorist organization, and it's in power today because they were supported internationally more than they were supported nationally. The Muslim Brotherhood has 600,000 members in it, while the Free Egyptians Party, for example, the Liberal Secular Party, has 5 million.
Wow.
So the United States decided to support the Islamists and not the secularists. So they are now in power, but it doesn't change the fact that they're a terrorist organization.
All right, so we're going to have to leave it there. But the bottom line is we are not only supporting the wrong regime, we're funding the wrong regime. Cynthia, thank you for being with us on Secure Freedom Radio. I say that advisedly. This is Fred Grandy filling in for Frank Gaffney. Be with us tomorrow night.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.